Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland sitting in today for Carl Gerke. And cancer researchers have announced results from a pilot study that uses next-generation sequencing techniques to identify and treat different kinds of cancers. And last week, I had the opportunity to discuss a pilot study with three doctors who are involved. Dr. John Lee is a physician scientist at Samford and principal investigator of the study. Dr. Howard Ernovitz is CEO at Chronix Biomedical, and Professor Eckhard Schutz is the Chief Technology Officer at Chronix Biomedical. Dr. John Lee begins by explaining the study.
The study design is very simple. With the advent of new ability to look at the whole genome or the whole genome, especially in cancer cells, can we use that ability to predict a response or how patients respond to their therapies? So the reason why, I'll stop there, but we can talk about the reason why that's really important. But that was the study design. And so we partnered with a newer company that is doing that called Chronix in our head and neck cancer patients to really determine, can we predict a patient's response to therapy?
So it's not really detecting a type of cancer, it's predicting the response to therapy.
So this would be very helpful. So if I knew that they were going to respond to radiation real well, I would be able to choose radiation. However, if they weren't going to respond, I could spare them the expense and all the morbidity associated with radiation with a very simple test. So in sum total, really what we are trying to do is, what everybody wants to do is minimize the effects of treating cancer and provide the best cure. And I think that would be the goal of this type of a understanding with the genomic, looking at the DNA from these cancer cells.
Okay, so I heard somebody tell me once that if your cancer comes back and you treat it again, that it is less effective the more times you have to, your body reacts or resists the chemotherapy, the drugs, that the first time out of the chute is the best time to treat cancer. Is that a myth or is that fact?
That's absolutely true. The tumor cells compensate and have the ability to become resistant to therapy. And so the idea here is, can we choose that best treatment at the very beginning? Because right now the way we do it is we look at, we say, this is a cellular type of cancer. We have no idea. And we know that percentage-wise, certain of them won't respond, and yet we treat them all the same anyway. Here, what we're asking at the very beginning, can we predict that response and know how to treat? Let's say, very simple, let's say that I have a fairly similar outcome with either surgery or radiation. Can I be able to predict that rather than just looking at the cell and saying, this is a head and neck cancer cell, which we can, that's how we do it currently. By saying, no, this head and neck cancer cell has this genomic fingerprint, which will determine its success or failure for a specific therapy. So this one will respond to surgery alone, or this one will respond to radiation alone. And so it would be really valuable, in many ways save money, save a lot of patients the ability to go through a therapy that doesn't work. And so that's kind of really what we're trying to set out for, to look at with this study with Chronix.
And so that's where it started, and where has it taken you? What have you discovered?
Well, maybe I'll turn that over to the people who we provided the sample, so I'll turn that over to both Dr. Ernovitz and Schutz, and to describe that a little bit more. They just presented their data at the largest kind of international cancer meeting in Chicago, so they can kind of summarize that data.
Okay, Dr. Ernovitz, you want to go first?
Sure, absolutely. So we were very excited that, as Dr. Lee said, that at the American Society of Clinical Oncology, held in Chicago every year, everybody comes and presents their data. And it's fair to say that our company, Chronix, took the position that if we're going to tackle something as complicated as cancer, currently what's being done is if I could use an analogy, we're looking at the cancer cells with Galileo's telescope and trying to map the universe star by star. So with my colleague, Dr. Schutz, who designed this entire technology, we decided to use the Hubble telescope and ask the question, what is every difference, or as we call them, mutations, in a cancer cell that's different from normals? And then can Dr. Schutz and his team come up with a simple answer that a clinician like Dr. Lee, cancer oncologist, can say, this treatment would work best if I do this and less so if I do that. And so by using the Hubble telescope, which we call next generation sequencing, we were successful in being able to organize the data when we're given the tissue and say, here's what our recommendation is based on the data. So we showed that in Chicago, and the response was very favorable and very pleased by it. So that's where the I believe the future of cancer management will go, is by using these very powerful machines to give a simple answer to the oncologist on what's the best first treatment so that we get it right the first time.
So this is just a simple test of the cancer.
Well, we like to call it simple, but when you're running 40 million sequences, compare where we are today. In 2000, we were all excited as a scientific community to hear that the human genome had just been sequenced over 6 years, $3 billion, and it was one person. Now we can do that in one day for less than $1,000. So it was the machines that we needed so that technologists like ourselves could then create these applications that could give the oncologist the absolute best answer. So thank you to the machines that allows us to make it simple and give patients the best treatment we can.
And Dr. Schutz, talk a little bit then about, so you take this and then how do you know? I mean, it obviously must be other testing that's going on as to what form of therapy treats what kind of sequencing.
Yeah, let me start with the point that what we are basically looking at is a big genetic difference which between a tumor cell and the normal cell that you're carrying around. And if you wish, basically you can understand carcinogenesis as a genetic disease. So that's what we are taking advantage of. There's a huge difference between a normal cell and a malignant cell. And that's what we are looking after. And as Dr. Onovitz just said, it's just a matter that you do it as comprehensive as you can do it at all. And that's what we are enabled over the last couple of years by this enormous new technologies. So the chance that we have in looking into that is to find out, can we even, and that's what we have done with Dr. Lee, can we even come to a point that we can, before anybody makes any treatment decision, predict which is the best treatment that you can use for this patient?
So what then is the next step in this study?
Well, I think this was a very preliminary look at a small subset of patients. And so what you need to do to make this a real valid finding is you do it in a large, very large set of patients. And after that, really, it is implementing into the clinic, which to me is, you know, being a cancer treating specialist is what's exciting. And if I can spare somebody a part of therapy that isn't going to work, then that would be, we would do it prospectively by looking at, you know, as a clinical trial. So we're not very far off. We'd probably have to do it in a slightly larger study to get enough numbers to be really significant from a statistics standpoint. And if that pans out, we would move forward quickly into designing how to implement this into the clinical setting.
And we're talking primarily, though, head and neck cancers. Give me some idea of what those are.
So the head and neck cancers are cancers of the tongue, mouth, throat. But this is also probably the findings would be much broader. I would dare to say it's about half of the cancers have similar types of treatments. And so the numbers become very big. I can't predict exactly for South Dakota, but I would say in the thousands of patients.
And is this then going to translate into newer therapies, newer treatments, newer medicines that is specific?
That's a great question. I mean, so that's exactly what I'd like to use it for. So, you know, first of all, we'd find the ones that we work for, and the ones that doesn't, then we would use this test then to try a newer therapy. And many of those are also predicted at the current meeting, and some of those are using the immune system or other modalities which aren't currently being used. So that's a great question, and I think that's what this would help with as well, because we would know, well, this is not going to respond to anything we currently have. Let's try something else or something new.
And something can be created given what is needed?
Yep. I mean, I think when you start looking at, you know, that we'll also have some of the predictions as far as what part of the genes are actually changed, and looks at those specific genes and then design a therapy based on that.
Hmm. And any other applications for this? Can it then translate then into other cancers as well?
This is Howard Dernovitz. We also showed at the oncology meetings that we had done a other study with rectal cancer patients, and these two cancers followed the same protocol that could give us this predictive value. So we've already done it in two different cancers. And then there's one part I forgot to mention, that we give the oncologist, the doctors, what is the best probability for treatment. And then I forgot to tell you about the second great thing, is a week or 2 weeks later, we can tell you if your decision was right. And that's the other study we're doing with Dr. Lee, is that once he administers the therapy, we then go in with a simple blood test that we're calling liquid biopsy. And by just taking a blood sample out, we can ask, is the tumor fingerprints gone? If they're gone, the therapy is working or greatly reduced. If it's not gone or increased, then this therapy choice we decided on needs to be changed. And this is what's called real-time monitoring. And this is what the team that Dr. Schutz has led has created, this liquid biopsy that now supports this 1-2 punch that we've come up with. Best treatment option up front, and then did it work a week later? So imagine what this translates into patient care. For some patients, you give therapy, you have to wait 12 weeks later to image the patient to see if it worked or not. Well, imagine, and then you change the therapy if it didn't work. Imagine if you could know that in a week. That is a big savings for making sure you're treating the patient correctly, and if the patient's not being correctly, how to change immediately. Because you said it at the beginning, that often we want to try and kill the primary tumor up front so that we can minimize the recurrence. This is the kind of technology that will point us in that direction.
And can you change therapies a week in, 2 weeks in?
Well, I'll let Dr. Lee answer that, but you have to understand there's a whole toolbox that the clinicians go through. But the key is you start with the thing that works at the 80% level, which is usually chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation. But Dr. Lee, this is actually more your question.
Yeah. You know, I think the earlier you know if there's going to be a recurrence, the easier it is to treat, because cancer is kind of like a fire. It's easier to blow out a match or a very small tumor than it is once it's become very large. And so if we could know early on whether a recurrence is going to happen, we could add it in additional therapy. And so that's really, I mean, that's what, when he's talking about it, is really an easy way to detect recurrence quickly, cheaply, and without, you know, currently, like for the head and neck right now, I have to do an open biopsy. That means cutting the skin. This is just a blood draw. This is done on people's blood. And so that would be the second part of what Dr. Interface's company has done, is really start looking at can we use that blood draw to really predict treatment response as well. So not only can we predict the initial treatment, but then also the response to therapy.
Okay, so you have the treatment, you have the of the response, the reaction to the treatment. Where does early detection fall in?
Well, that's going to be that will come with time. And
that's a great question.
Yes, it's and
I stumped the doctor.
Yeah,
well, actually, you stumped me because investors are going to listen to this and they know that if we're going to do that, remember how regulations work in medicine. That right now, the test we're offering is a laboratory developed test. And so that falls under the regulatory body of the Center for Disease Control and the College of American Physicians. And these types of tests are called CLIA lab tests. But that's because we already know that this person we're studying has cancer, and we know what type of cancer they have. What you're asking me is a screening test when we'll tell people for the first time that they have cancer. And again, you have to be right 100% of the time. So that means that it would require larger clinical studies and tens of millions of dollars, working very close with the Food and Drug Administration to make sure that the claims are 100%. Now, if I can give you a forward-looking statement, we will be able to do that. And what my vision is to have one simple blood test that can detect all cancers. So from get that statement to it onto the commercial market, it's going to be 5 to 7 years to do so. But you know what? It's important, so we will do it.
And you have the technology to do it now that you didn't have before?
We need, I'll tell you what we need. We need funding. The second thing we need is funding, and the third thing we need is funding. because what we have is we have great collaborators, Dr. Lee and the folks at Sanford that have helped us. They have the biobank, so they have all the materials that they can blind for us and give them to us for us to test. What we have to do is take Dr. Schutz's team's data and reduce it to practice to say what is the least common denominator that we can provide that says this is a cancer and this is not. In our poster at the meeting last week, the oncology meeting, we showed using a very crude method and an expensive method that we could show the difference in a small study between Dr. Lee's cancer patients and our other colleague, Dr. Richardson, who our control was head and neck diseases of papillomatosis, you know, little lumps that you have. So Dr. Schutz's team showed that we could show the difference between a non-cancer and a cancer. Okay, we take that data, and did I mention we need funding? And we take that, and we then build a simple test. But that simple test has to be tested in multiple sites, 5 to 10 sites, lots of samples, so the statistics are there, and it has to be reviewed then by the Food and Drug Administration.
And that was Dr. Howard Ernovitz, the CEO at Chronix Biomedical. Also joining me is Dr. John Lee, a physician scientist at Sanford and principal investigator in this study, and also Eckhard Schutz, the chief technology officer at Chronix Biomedical.